Blog Talk Radio.
This is Sound Health Options. Richard and Sherry are here with you today. We are the co-hosts. We are going to be talking about moving beyond loss. To let you know that the author, Russell Friedman, we were not able to confirm with him. So Richard is on the lookout for him at our switchboard. So as we move along, and if you're listening, Richard Friedman, the number, 347-850-1407. Your agent should have provided this to you, so we're waiting on you to be our guest, because we think this is an exciting... I will close that mic. Please keep your mics muted as we go along. So we will be on the lookout for you. Just call that number and punch the number 1, and you'll be on the air, and Richard will take care of it using the switchboard. We are simultaneously broadcasting today, so if you would like to go to our site, Sound Health Options, that's plural, soundhealthoptions.com, you can go to the radio section on the top, and that will take you directly to our topic and the date. And our topic today is there a painless path to recovery from loss? We are being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, and we have dealt with several things about loss here. We can talk to you about that. I want to say good morning to Richard and all of you online with us. Hello,
good morning.
Richard.
No, I'm here. I'm just monitoring a few tricks in the background. You know how it is, juggling the things in the background while the show is going. Yes, good morning.
Before the show, we showed something that was from YouTube, and it was from Dr. McCullough, called Death by Medicine. So we always have a nice little chat and things that we want to share with people. So if you come in early to the WebEx, and you can get the address from our site, soundhealthoptions.com, and just go to the radio section, and it gives you information about how to be there. You know, in talking about grief, we still don't have a guest, Richard?
No, we don't. Not yet.
Okay, and I have no way to call them. In talking about grief, none of us escape it, whether it's a loss by death or divorce or forced separation, like the military or from your parents. When that happens, we miss the support of the person, the energy of the person, the companionship. You know, and I've even heard that people who have operations, I have a friend who had her operation when she was about 5, and they took out her bowel. She had some kind of infection, and she says she feels a loss of that part of her body. So there's a lot of different kinds of loss. Now, as we're waiting for our guest, and we sort of thought this might happen, I have a 60-minute tape that I would like to share with people, and then we'll come back to the topic. In the meantime, I am going to try to find a number to get in touch and find out where our guest is. So this is 60 Minutes, and it's an incredible eye-opener. So we wanted to share this with you as an announcement for those of you who are bioacoustic practitioners. Andrew, yes. The answer to everyone. Audio working on WebEx, yes. Let me... yes, audio is working on...
I'm not hearing your audio on WebEx.
Oh, well, let's go
I'm
back.
Hearing you, I'm hearing you fine at Blog Talk, but I'm not hearing you at WebEx. And I'm getting that comment from people in WebEx as well.
Well, I will go back out and start in. Well, this little movie is going on. Audio in conference. We like to do this because there is so much going on all the time. No, absolutely no speaker whatsoever. Let me go test. I hate this.
Well, I'll talk for a moment while you're, you know, speaking of loss. I mean, there's, you know, I think loss is in the category of the post-traumatic stress program because, as you know, there's, when I was in the healthcare, the recovery center, which I always have to clarify was not drug-related, there's your audio.
Okay. Go ahead, Richard.
That I watched people around me who were had relatives that were in the recovery center. I had surgery and was in a healthcare facility for almost a year due to multiple surgeries. And I saw people in that facility that had people that were sick and then loss. And there was no grief counseling, there was no kind of counseling. And this was a large facility, almost 200 beds. And there was really no counseling for people who had gone through the stress and the trauma and shock of just dealing with someone in a healthcare facility who was either post-surgical or had had an illness or, you know, someplace they had to go after they'd gone to the ER. And these people would be walking down the hallways after the loss, after the trauma and shock of dealing with, you know, being in a having a loved one in a facility, to then suddenly they're just gone. And these people look like post-traumatic stress people. I mean, it's really hard. It's really, and if you don't have somebody around you who can help talk you through it or have a conversation or dialogue about it, it's really hard stuff.
And there's very few people who even know what to say about it. Now, I want to play this medical fraud thing and then come back to this conversation, if that's okay, or we can save this.
No, that's fine. No. I think the fraud is really important. So let's do that. I think we should do that, and then we'll come back to this conversation.
Okay. And while this is going on, I'm going to go call this agent. Well, now there's no sound on it.
You want to believe that your prescription medicine is safe and effective.
Okay.
The pharmaceutical industry says that it follows the highest standards for quality, but in November, we found out just how much could go wrong at one of the world's largest drug makers. A subsidiary of GlaxoSmithKline pleaded guilty to distributing adulterated drugs. There was reason to believe some of the medications were contaminated with bacteria, others were mislabeled, and some were too strong or not strong enough. It's likely that Glaxo would have gotten away with it had it not been for a company insider. A tip from Cheryl Eckert set off a major federal investigation. She's never told the public what she saw inside Glaxo, but tonight she will. Her story opens a rare window on how one company traded its good name for bad medicine. Cheryl Eckert worked in Glaxo Quality Control, and over 10 years she'd risen to become a manager of global quality assurance. Her job was to inspect plants like this Glaxo facility in North Carolina to make sure that the drugs had the right ingredients, the right potency, and met government standards for purity. In 2002, Eckert was assigned to help lead a quality assurance team to evaluate one of Glaxo's most important plants in Cedra, Puerto Rico. 900 people worked here, making 20 drugs for patients in the U.S. But Eckert says that when she saw what was happening to some of the company's most popular drugs, she couldn't believe it.
all the systems were broken. The facility was broken. The equipment was broken. The processes were broken. It was the worst thing I had run across in my career.
The worst because so many things behind these walls were going wrong at once. Eckert says water used to make tablets was tainted with bacteria. Failures on production lines made some drugs too strong, some not strong enough. And the employees were contaminating products, including the antibacterial ointment Bactroban, which was made in a sealed tank to prevent contamination.
They were opening up the lid, and then they were sticking their body into the tank and scraping it with like a paddle.
But this product is supposed to be free of bacteria. Why would they do that?
It saved money.
As her team continued its evaluation of the plant, Eckert says she discovered something much worse than contamination. Because of failures on various production lines, she says that powerful medications were getting mixed up.
Are you saying that different kinds of drugs were packed into the same bottle?
Yes, and that's shocking. That's
yes, it is.
Shocking.
Eckert says this chart that she produced for company executives shows the kinds of mix-ups that were happening at Cedra. She identified 9, including Avandia diabetes pills mixed in packages with over-the-counter Tagamet antacids and Paxil antidepressants mixed with the Avandia diabetes drug.
When you saw these mix-ups happening, what did you do?
I contacted the vice president of quality for North America, and I told him that he needed to shut down the factory and call the FDA.
Shut the whole thing down?
Right. I urged him to stop the trucks that were leaving the dock that day.
What happened then?
I went back to work and waited for the news that they had called the FDA or that they had stopped shipments, and it didn't happen.
Eckert says as the mix-ups continued, a pharmacist called the company with a story about a mix-up involving the powerful antidepressant Paxil in its 10-milligram dose. The patient was an 8-year-old boy.
The grandmother came in to pick up this little boy's prescription, and in front of the pharmacist, she opened up the bottle, she tore off the induction seal, and she looked at it, and she became upset, and she said, I knew it. His medicine has always been yellow, but last month it was pink, and he's been so sick.
And what did that mean, the yellow and the pink?
Paxil 10 milligram is yellow. It's not pink.
There is a version of Paxil that is pink. Paxil CR is 25 milligrams, if that's what the pills were. The boy was getting 2.5 times his prescribed dose. Eckert says that she assigned one of her investigators to the case and found that both Paxil doses were made on one production line, which led her to a theory of how the mix-up could have happened.
Maybe there was still Paxil in the hopper, the filling hopper, when they switched out the bottles and changed out the labels. So in that batch, some of the first bottles that went through were labeled 10 milligram when they were actually 25.
She says she took her findings to the same vice president that she had asked to shut down the plant 5 months before.
I took it and I handed it to him. And I said to him, you know, read this. And he put his head down and put his hands over his face. And he said, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Did they shut down the plant then?
No, they filed a report with the FDA that said that that the mix-up was not real and did not happen at the factory. We all knew. They all knew it was real.
The Glaxo report to the FDA Cheryl Eckert is talking about said it was extremely unlikely the Paxil mix-up occurred at Cedra. We don't know what happened to the boy because drug incident reports don't contain names. But the Glaxo note to the FDA said there were no adverse reactions. The vice president that Eckert says she spoke to is no longer with Glaxo, and he declined to talk with us. Glaxo denies Eckerd's allegations, and it denies that it ever lied to the FDA. In fact, the company was eager to tell us that it has learned from Cedra. Ian McCubbin is a senior vice president from Glaxo headquarters in London.
We regret what happened in Cedra, but we've worked really, really hard to resolve those issues. We spend $600 million every year on making sure that our plant and equipment is state-of-the-art.
Would you say that the company was chastened by all of this?
No, I'd say that the company was very disappointed that this occurred and that we regret that this occurred. But we've learned from it, and what you learn from, you become stronger.
You have how many plants around the world?
We have around 80 plants around the world now.
Do any of them operate in the way that Cedra did?
Absolutely not.
So how did Cedra go wrong?
They all operated to the same standard, the same quality system that we had in place. The difference between Cedra and all the rest of the plants was the effectiveness with which that quality system was implemented. It was much weaker, and that resulted in the compliance issues that occurred.
Cheryl Eckerd says that she was issuing warnings and no one was listening.
I don't know Cheryl Eckerd, and I don't know all the details of her accusations. What I do know is that we were working with the FDA before Cheryl went to that plant.
It was an FDA inspection that first revealed problems at Cedra, and that's why Glaxo sent Eckerd's team in, to resolve those FDA concerns. But Eckerd says she found much more than the FDA did. FDA inspections of drug plants are only occasional, so it's up to the drug companies to police themselves.
Probably most drugs are safe that people are taking, but there are scary examples like this that certainly raise questions.
Dr. Jerry Avorn of Harvard Medical School is one of the nation's leading authorities on pharmaceuticals. He says that Eckerd's story is an extraordinary look at what can happen when there aren't enough investigators to follow up on the federal inspections.
The fact that there were so many different kinds of problems and that there were even other issues about diabetes drugs and antidepressants on the same line getting allegedly mixed together, the sterility issues, it speaks of a really pretty chaotic, out-of-control manufacturing process. This was not apparently one isolated incident. It just looks like nobody was minding the store at this plant.
What do you say to someone who says, well, you know, the drug manufacturing process is very complicated, very hard to do. There are bound to be mistakes.
Just because something is complicated doesn't mean it's okay to get it wrong. We don't accept that of our brain surgeons or of our airlines or of other complicated things in society. The reason we pay so much for drugs, more than any other country, is that we expect that in exchange for those high prices, the companies are going to actually manage their manufacturing processes carefully.
Cheryl Eckerd says her first warning to shut down the plant at Cedra came in August 2002. She continued to work 7 days a week reporting to executives, but nothing seemed to be changing on the factory floor, and the frustration was taking its toll.
The director of manufacturing at the factory, maybe he was the VP of manufacturing at the factory, he pulled me aside and said, we can all tell that you've been crying. You come here every day, and your eyes are swollen because you've been crying, so I want to ask you to stop that. And I said to him, you know, I do cry. I cry at night, I cry in the morning, and what I don't understand is why I'm the only one. Why aren't you crying?
After 8 months of reporting problems at Cedra, Eckerd sent this summary to seven executives detailing nine high-risk areas at the plant, including the mix-ups, the water contamination, and the problems with sterility. She warned that if the FDA knew what the company knew, the government could seize the factory. Weeks later, she was out of a job. Glaxo said it was downsizing. Still worried about patient safety, Eckerd took the same information she'd sent to her Glaxo bosses and turned it over to the FDA. Just as she had warned, federal agents executed a search warrant at the plant and ultimately seized effective drugs worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
This case goes right to the heart of patient safety.
Neil Getnick and Leslie Ann Skillen are Cheryl Eckerd's lawyers, and under the federal whistleblower law, they filed suit on behalf of the federal government, claiming that Glaxo had defrauded the taxpayers.
How is this fraud against the U.S. government?
Pharmaceutical drugs are paid for by our Medicare program for the elderly, by our Medicaid program for the impoverished. And here we have a situation where hundreds of millions of dollars were paid for adulterated drugs through our Medicaid programs.
Glaxo pleaded guilty to a felony. It admitted it distributed adulterated drugs, Paxil CR, Avandamin, a diabetes drug, Kytral, a drug given to cancer patients, and Bactroban. Altogether, the company paid $750 million to settle the criminal conviction and Cheryl Eckert's suit.
Can anything like this happen at Glaxo again?
I absolutely hope not. We will work really hard to resolve these issues and make sure that our quality management system is in place and robust.
The plant at Cedra is closed. Glaxo says no drugs made there are on the market today, and it says there is no evidence that anyone was hurt by the defective medications. Under the whistleblower law, Eckert was rewarded with a percentage of the millions that the government recovered in the fraud suit. Her portion comes to $96 million.
You know that there are people watching this interview who are saying, well, she did it for the money.
Right.
And to them you say what?
That I hope and I pray that their mothers and their brothers and their children have safer medicine today than they had before I filed that lawsuit. And I believe they will, right? I believe they will.
This was done by 60 Minutes, which I consider a reputable company, a reputable program. And when we're talking about loss, I looked at this, prepared this, because this is a preventable loss. And I looked up, this man from the Glaxo company said there's absolutely no evidence that these drugs killed anyone. And when I looked up drugs that have killed people, there's over 4 million, nearly 5 million results on one search engine about drugs that kill, wrong prescriptions, taking the wrong ones. And when you lose somebody because a drug company had no heart, their own employee trying to get them to make a change, and they turn around and say, well, her accusations, I don't know her, her accusations. She was trying to make it better for the rest of us. Losing a child or a parent is bad enough, and it's something that we should learn to do better, because none of us are going to get out of this place alive, at least bodily, maybe in spirit. But when these drug companies get a fine for a felony of $750 million, and you get a spokesman, the head of the company, who just really acts like they don't care that there were all of these losses. TJ is $750 million went to WHO, World Health Organization.
I'm not sure if he's saying that or if he's saying who did that money go to. I'm not sure. TJ, could you type that in?
It went to the government as a fine, and then this whistleblower, they said, got $92 million of that. And I will bet she turned around and ended up putting it together an organization. I haven't followed it up. That would try to help people. She looks like a very genuine. Her voice is very genuine about this. She wanted this to help people. And we have seen loss here and people trying to get over it, and they can't understand why these drug companies are so heartless that it's, well, that's just a statistic. You know, when it's your child that dies from a vaccination, and there's been plenty of them in the last few years, and I totally consider that a drug, and those twin babies that died within an hour of getting shots, and they have no way of testing who's going to be safe and who isn't. That's one of the things we're trying to do here with our PREVAC program, to see if these kids are even ready to look at this. Richard, have you lost people in your life? Or if you want to even talk about the loss of your body parts when you had to go into rehab, you have anything you want to share?
I've lost people. Both my parents are dead or deceased, as people like to say. And I went through that process, and I was the primary with both of them. And I definitely relate back to what I was talking about earlier when I was at the healthcare facility recovering from surgeries. That there's that period where you are visiting them at the hospital every day, or you're with them every day, or you're at the recovery center every day, visiting and being in an atmosphere which is not necessarily particularly, I don't know what to call it. I can't say even restful. I mean, you know, friendly. And then you go through the stress and strain of, you know, supporting all the people around you and being with the person who's in the bed, who's sick or in recovery, or you're uncertain, and that's your driving force. You're kind of blinded to everything else that's going on around you because you have to focus all of your, or in my case, focus all of my focus on being with that person and taking care of their needs and wants and desires and keeping people away or managing visitors, and then boom, they're dead. And there you are, I think right at that moment of death, you're the post-traumatic stress person, because suddenly that thing that's been a driving force for you for however long it took them either to get well or to get deceased, there you are. You know, your life is suddenly, you're supposed to just kind of, because of our culture and because of how we are with death, you're just supposed to, you know, everybody knows there's a sad period, but there's a period at which people just are, you know, can't talk about it anymore because it's too hard a subject. It's too difficult to talk about death because, like you say, nobody's going to get out alive. I mean that in a humorous way. I don't mean that like a, ooh, scary. But it's a thing. It's a very hard, hard thing. And I can't imagine, you know, losing a child or losing a, you know, like I said, I've lost both parents. I haven't lost a sibling. However, it's really hard. It's, you know, and whether we're talking about that kind of loss or the loss of a, you know, a job or a career, or, you know, suddenly where they close the factory down and you're, that's it, you thought you had a career path. It's all intense loss.
I'm going to be very, very callous here. I actually have two sets of parents, two fathers and two mothers, because I met my biological parents when I was an adult and went through the death process by the side of three of them. And there's something that happens biochemically with my biological mother. It was, oh, please let me go. I am just tired of living. And I thought, where are those chemicals coming from? And I looked it up. There are chemicals of death that help the person let go. And I want to see if there's chemicals in the brain that allow us to abate thinking about death and dying. On the other side of that, my adoptive parents, it came to the point where I absolutely knew that they were better off dead. Now, that sounds terrible, but my father had had a heart attack. He was in a rest home, and he had no quality of life whatsoever. He was just laying there breathing. They were feeding him through a tube. His skin began to break down. So that's much easier to let go of, knowing that it's time for them to rebody so to speak, and I truly believe that people take their spiritual body with them, and I've seen so much evidence of it. But when you lose a child to a mandatory vaccination, and you can't find the reason for it except that the government mandated it, or when you... I felt much more devastated when... boy, I don't know how to say this without telling on myself. I'll just use it in third person. When there is a issue with your partner having an affair and not giving you a reason for it and just needing to be with someone else, that was much more devastating than my parents or my brother dying. And my brother died of drug interactions. Even thinking about a useless, my brother died at 55 from drug interactions. The doctor gave him insulin as well as diet pills at the same time, and it deteriorated his heart and his kidneys. And they knew that that interaction would do that, and the doctor did it anyway. Maybe my brother bugged him. But for me, the loss of a breakup is much more painful, and you hurt in your very core, and you'll do almost anything to get that pain to go away because you don't have a reason why. Think about these wars that we're in right now, and more people have died in these stupid, senseless, and yes, that's my opinion, I don't think we should be over there fighting anyway. That you go over there and fight for somebody else's pocketbook, that has to be some kind of total devastation of your soul, that your country sold you out, your president sold you out, the Secretary of State sold you out, the whatever it is, to be sold out in the name of statistics or the name of putting gasoline in someone's tank here. You know, they say it's to protect our interests for gasoline in the Middle East and to keep war or to keep peace by making war. You know, we only get 10% of our gasoline from those other countries. Most of it we get from Canada and Mexico. What is the reason? It isn't even logical to go kill our own people in the name of making people here safe. I just don't get it. 9/11 killed, what, 2,000 plus? And now there's 4,000 plus died in these wars? That isn't even mathematically sane. And I'm going to get on, yeah, follow the money, absolutely. I'm going to get on my horse here. There are black ops soldiers over there making $1,000 a day, all expenses paid. And the people they can sucker into going into our army pay for their shoes, pay for their bullets, pay for their gun, pay for their food, and have very little left to live on. That is ridiculous. Why, anyway, these young kids, they go in and they talk to them about honor and prestige, and really they're there saying, we can make money on this war, and we want you to go make that available. And then these drug companies, they come back with, we do lots of wonderful things, and we should be praised, not smacked, for creating drugs. Now, this woman proved, FDA came in after, proved that they were putting out drugs with the wrong label. They had all kinds of warnings about, don't get drugs from China, it's the wrong stuff. Hey, don't get drugs from Glaxo. That's who this was, it's the wrong stuff. I can't believe they're the only ones. Richard, can I ask your opinion about this uncertainty in relationships and loss? When you lost your parents, did it hurt in a different way than when you lost a relationship?
Well, it was different partially for me because in both cases with my parents, I was happy that they got to go because, for instance, in the case of my mother, she had metastasized cancer. And there was no, it wasn't a battle back then. This was a long time ago, more than 20 years. And she was in, not only was she in physical pain, she was in psychic pain. You know, I mean, everything about it was bad. And I was happy when she got to go because she was ready. So there was a certain kind of relief in that she did get to, you know, I call it dead, but that always sounds so harsh to people. When she finally did get to die, it was a relief for her, and it was a certain sense of relief for me because a loved one was in pain. I mean, in a gestalt pain that was just no matter, you know, the drugs. Yeah, you can drug somebody and keep them sort of in a stupor, but what is that? You know, that's she wasn't having any kind of quality of life. And so when she finally did die, the loss and the grief for me was less in that I was really present with her up until the end, and I got to participate. I don't mean I did anything, but I got to participate with her and be with her and be really present with her and make her comfortable and be at ease by my presence. So in the sense of loss of that was much less than it was in, you know, loss of relationships. I will allude to having had a partnership years ago where somebody did cheat on me, and when I found that out, I was devastated. And there was no way to process that at the time. I, you know, spent time talking either in therapy or, which I'm not particularly pro. I think therapy is fun, but I don't think it's necessarily productive. That's my belief. That's my view. But I, you know, it was really hard. My mother's loss was hard, but it was tearfully joy-filled that she got to go because it was not going to get better. And in the case of, as you say, in the case of the loss of, you know, the spouse that cheated on me and the loss of that breakup was really hard and is difficult to process out, which makes me kind of come back to the post-traumatic stress program, now that I'm talking about that, of course, living my life on air, that it would be interesting to have me talk about that in the post-traumatic stress program and see how that shows up in my vocal print. That would be really interesting, just to see what that looks like.
Well, let's tell people who are unfamiliar with that, NanoVoice, NanoVoice.org, is a program that's available for you online. And you can talk about this and see where the devastation is dropping your energy or putting too much energy in. And there's a two-hour video there for you to be able to watch it. There are some incredible chats here for our Blog Talk audience that can't see this WebEx. TJ says, emotional pain has many faces.
I love that one. That one is fabulous. That is true, so true. That's a great statement, TJ.
When you were letting go of your mother or trying to let go of the relationship, was it a different kind of grief? I mean, can you put your finger on it? I mean, it was still loss, but one had a reason, and the other was maybe something you did or didn't do. So there was blame. When your parents die, most of the time there's not a lot you can do because it's just that time.
No, they were very different in the sense, as you say, with my mother. Well, this is also true of my father. It was just his was just a different thing. But with my mother, it was a sense of relief. There was still trauma and shock.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that space was suddenly void of that person I had known. Although still, as I like to say, from the other side, when she wants my attention, I'll smell cigarette smoke, because she was a smoker. So sometimes psychically, when I smell cigarette smoke, I'm like, huh, what? She's telling me something. But that's a separate show.
I love that. And
yeah,
I have a friend who's that way. And we agreed he'd give me a sign, and one of the things I hated about him was to smell all that cigarette smoke. But I want to tell a story on my dad. When he was in the intensive care unit at one point, they didn't allow him to have flowers, and I don't know why. But he loved cats, and so I brought him this little black and white kind of spotted cat, and he seemed to take comfort from it, and it was kind of a connection between us. I told him he needed me because we had a psychic connection, that he could just put that energy into the cat and I'd come running, and it worked, and I did. So he died, and about 6 weeks later, I go into our local post office, and it's kind of a little country post office. There's about 1,000 people in this little teeny town, and there, sitting on a counter, was a black and white speckled cat, and it was really a kitten. And it was sitting there in the corner on top of the counter. Now, we had this wonderful postmaster lady who just loved everybody in the community. And she said that cat wandered in, and they didn't know what to do with it. So they set it up on the counter to see if somebody would adopt it, but it wouldn't go near anybody. And I'm sitting there with my arms up on this counter, and this little cat comes over and gets in the circle of my arms and starts rubbing on my face. And Nettie said, that is just absolutely unusual. There have been 50 to 100 people in here this morning, and that cat wouldn't have anything to do with any of them. Now, one of the things about my dad is he used to sit at the kitchen table, and my mom would walk by, and he'd smack her butt, you know, as she's walking into the kitchen. That cat would get up on his chair and smack my mom's butt when she walked by. Now...
yeah, okay. That's great.
I don't know if people want to just get freaked out by reincarnation into an animal or whatever. It could be all just absolutely coincidence. I don't think so, because that cat would get up and turn off the TV when you're through, which is one of the things my dad refused to do. Everybody else had to get up and turn off the TV. He wouldn't budge. So maybe he's trying to make up for something. But one day the cat could not reach the TV and went over and unplugged, took her teeth and unplugged the plug when she couldn't reach the piece she wanted. It's just, that's just awesome. So I believe your cigarette smoke and your mom's errand. I just stop now and say, okay, what do you want? I'm open. So I believe in that avenue, and like you said, it's another show, but there is another comment to change the subject a little bit, from Norm that says, my grief and pain is the loss of what I thought was a free country. Wow. That kind of loss. I think Norm just put his finger on my discomfort that I have been feeling about what's going on with our government. Look at them, government, well, really, executive order banning guns, when the government is the number one distributor of the types of guns that they're trying to ban. That is this total cognitive dissonance. So when Norm says that, my grief and pain is the loss of what I thought was a free country. I believe a great many people, half according to the votes, and probably three quarters if the votes were counted for real and not cheated, I think this country is feeling the loss of a government that is protective and caring. So, Norm, thank you for that. That's just incredible. And Robert says, that's loss and delusionment. You lose your faith in what you thought your country was. That's incredible and very quieting to me, that But I didn't think about that. I'm so concerned, but I never put my finger on it until I read this comment by Norm. And he's saying also he feels a loss of our Constitution. And it's really a loss of your foundation. When you lose your parents, you sort of expect that. When you lose a child, a husband, a sibling, that's sort of, especially a child, that's a loss of your foundation. It's a loss of your support and your energy. Now, I want to talk about a mistake here. I'm going to change subjects a little bit more. I was in a hospital room where a young girl was begging her grandmother not to die. And the grandmother is begging her and saying, "Oh, please, let me go, let me go. I'm in so much pain, let me go." Does that granddaughter's energy hold the grandmother? We're looking at the field, the connection that's non-physical with all of us. And this lady is moaning and wants to die, but someone's begging her not to. Is that selfish or is that caring? Anybody have a comment? Richard?
I think it's really tricky. I have a belief. This is my opinion. This is where the flag goes up on my opinion. My belief is that when I talk about being part of the process of my mother's death, is that I think there comes a point at which you have to allow them and give them the freedom to go. You have to give them that, you know, I think that energetic attachment of the person, you know, and I understand the why you don't want them to go, and yet there's a point at which you have to allow them the choice to go. Because I think otherwise they'll keep hanging on. That energy will keep that thread, in radionics we would call that a control line. That control line can keep somebody from being able to cross. And I don't mean in a finger-waggy pointing way. I just mean in the way of, you know, you have to allow the space for them to go whatever direction you think they're going.
It is very hard. You know, and some people don't show that they care. They just sort of keep it all inside. And that's one of the things that our expected guest was going to talk about, you know, the myths of death and dying. But I would like to take it a step further into bioacoustics and tell a story. My husband has an abundant note of D in his voice and in his energy. Now, he's a Taurus, a C-sharp, which makes him kind of stubborn and aloof anyway. But his D note was just so incredibly overabundant, and my D note is so incredibly gone that we made a good, needy pair. I needed the D that he needed to get rid of. So his father was also a dominant note of D, and was actually born under the Gemini note of D. So astrology fits into here a little bit, sort of, kind of. So his father died of leukemia, and my husband did not show one outward sign. It was expected. His life quality was not good. But looking at his vocal print, his abundant note of D totally disappeared. I couldn't stand to be in the same room with him. We had been married 30-some years. I couldn't stand for him to say good morning to me. I couldn't stand to be beside his energy, and I really didn't know what was going on. Then our granddaughter came to visit, and our granddaughter is an absolute overabundant note of D. And everything smoothed out, and we loved each other again. She was only there for 3 or 4 days. And I'm thinking, what is making the difference? And I started doing these evaluations, this nano voice. She had this note of D that both of us were missing. So how much of this emotional struggle is manifest through our field, through our energy, and that's what's causing the issue, not some emotional thing that we had to make up to fit the behavior that we couldn't stand each other. When you have a loss, I would invite all of you to go to nanovoice.org and talk about it, and then to look at some music that may have those energies. We have programmed crystals for people with certain energies, but I think the music would be an incredible way to go. And I think I have a music list here. Public music, is this what this one is? We could send this to people. No, that's Jill's stuff. That didn't come up.
It makes me think of that vision you have of a booth where people walk into a booth and have a vocal analysis, you know, someplace, and it makes me think about like these healthcare facilities or hospitals or, you know, places where you could have a booth that people would step in and they'd talk for 30 seconds and then they'd, you know, I'm making this up as I go, but sort of my vision would be you talk into that and then you'd have some balancing tones for another minute or so, and, you know, it would help you cleanse some of the energies that have built up in your system from the stress of, you know, the day. And
or
cleanse
even
them each day so it doesn't get built up.
Or even an iPod application. You talk into it, da 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 da. It tells you what you don't have and it plays your music for you. I do have a music list. I was just looking for it on my desktop. If any of you want to have a copy of that music list, I'm going to put my email address in here, sherryonair@gmail.com. So drop me a little note and I'll send you that list. And you could start out by looking at their birthday. Now, this is only good about 80% of the time. That if we start with a note of C is Aries, C sharp is Taurus, D, Gemini, D sharp, Cancer. There is a chart of this on that nanovoice.org. And just start with a note of C is Aries and move right down and you can see the numbers. You could also see what was their favorite color. My favorite color is Capricorn blue. I am the opposite of D sharp, which is Cancer. I am at the note of A. So you could get a lot of information about what colors to fill in so you don't feel the grief. And I know that sounds really strange, but I think what we miss is that person's energy as well as their companionship. So if we can fill that energy back in by music or color or talking or whatever way we can go, I think that would help. It's for me, loss without a reason or without anything that I could do about it. Well, I'd put it another way. Loss without a way to accept it is absolutely gut-wrenching. There's some good comments here. I believe that this is selfish. This is from Lydia, and we were asking the question, is it selfish not to let somebody go? I believe that this is selfish, and yet it does hold their energy here. Unless the person dying knows that our soul lives on, they will move on. But for those who don't believe this way, then it can hold them here longer. So it's a gift for you to accept. That's an awesome statement. Okay, TJ is asking, is it your granddaughter's attachment that she is having difficulty addressing? I don't quite understand that. If you could give me a little more information. She was just visiting, and she's an adult, so she was visiting, and because she was there, she added the notes that we were missing. And Norm says, in answer to that question about is it selfish to hold someone here, depends on the soul contract between the two individuals. Myself, I think much better to invite them to step onward. I would agree with that. But that goes right back to Obamacare. If people say they want to die, is that okay now? Is all of these people who help facilitate other people's suicide because they want it out, is that going to be erased? Probably not. But you can go request that they've made arrangements called death panels, made arrangements, I'm tired of living, I'm ready to go, help me out. You know, I don't think people are so much afraid of death as the pain of it and leaving behind the things they didn't get done. Richard, have you thought about your own death?
Oh, sure. I went through in the last, not quite a year and a half, I went through 20 hours of surgeries and anesthesias and, you know, being in other places. And so I'd wander through that from time to time, post-op, well, actually pre-op, usually just that moment of fear, thinking, oh, I may not come back. But then there were other times during that whole process where I might be thinking, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's okay that I go. I didn't know at the time. It wasn't in a suicidal way. I think that's a very different perspective. But yet another conversation is the difference between suicidal quality and the concept that maybe it is my time to go. Those are very different thoughts, and I wandered through that. Maybe it is my time to go. Maybe it was my, you know, maybe this is it. I don't know. You know, love the people around me and see what happens through the other side.
Well, when you've had that threat, like you've had that operation, and there were times when you may have slipped away just during all of your year of recuperation, and I've had strokes, and there are times when I felt I may not wake up in the morning. You know, what's that? I've probably a whole another show, because we have like 4 minutes left here. But what if I don't wake up in the morning? What would you regret? What would you have left undone? As your mom says, did you leave home with clean bloomers because you might be in an accident?
Yeah. That kind of thing.
But
am I wearing clean underwear? Oh, my God. Yeah.
But I don't think we can live that way. What if I die in the next hour? I think that would be pretty morbid, and I think it would curtail us from really living. But there are things left unsaid to people. There are things left undone. For me, it's research uncovered that I want to do, and I've made that list, and I'm making an effort to get through it. Norm says, Michael Newton's book truly presents how much better it is to permit someone to move on. And there's several of you who've mentioned books here that I want to let our Blog Talk audience know about. Dr. Chancy Crandall's book, Raising the Dead, A Doctor's Encounter with the Miraculous. He's a cardiologist, writes about clinically dead people. Colleen posted that. Sounds great. There's a lot of a religion. There's a lot of survival tied up in all of this. Norm, what is the name of Michael Newton's book that you're talking about? And Robert posts something I think is really good here. With losses, especially ones, as you say, without a reason, I would suggest that those energies may show up as a slice or missing in the vocal print. They do. Or just a gone on the nano voice, because most people listening won't be using the abacus. And as well as what will affect that post-traumatic stress disorder chemicals. When you have a loss, and let's say the person is the note of D, and that note of D gets pulled out, yanked out by the roots in your vocal print, then that frequency of D that runs your liver, your pancreas, and your gallbladder no longer has the energy, and the body begins to break down. That is something that we should teach people. We should do a whole show about that and have people just come on and talk about loss and see how that might affect the body. I think that would be incredible.
I think that would be a great show. I think there's a lot of what I would call in the category of loss. As we say, you know, we're talking mostly quite a bit about death, but as you say, there's relationship loss, there's job loss, there's, you know, dreams, you know, visions that we had that, you know, and I'm certain in this economic time there are a lot of people out there that have, you know, been on a certain path in terms of moving toward retirement or moving toward, you know, I've had this job in this company for so many years and I'm going to work another 5 years and then I'll be able to retire. I mean, it's all sorts and types of loss that I think would be a great show to, you know, talk about those things.
We'll do it. One is that I make rules for myself. I don't go to funerals, and I don't look at the casket. I don't want that to be my last memory. I want to, my last memory to be an interaction with that person.
Boy, I have to say the crowd at WebEx is really just a rousing group of, you know, great thoughts here in chat.
It is. One of the things that Norm says again, well, when I'm ready to shift to the next dimension, I have zero desire to force the issue. I would agree with that. Whenever I receive an invitation from the higher realms for a completely harmonious transition, I will absolutely accept that invitation. Again, back to we all want to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die to get there.
Yeah. My bags are packed, but I'm not sure I'm ready to go. Yeah.
But a lot of people hurry that along when they know they're allergic to something that they eat it anyway. I mean, there's a form of slow death that we aren't supporting our optimal health. TJ says, it's important to remember and realize that we are spiritual beings here having a physical experience. I think that helps. Newton's book, Journey of the Souls and Destiny of the Souls, is the sequel. If you had a choice, if each of us really had a choice, leave you with this question because we're out of time, at what age would you want to go? Or what place in your life would you want to go? And what's your bucket list that you want to choose? Why is it only, nearly only, older people who have a bucket list? How to live your life in support of what your soul really desires. I've decided, people, when I leave this corporeal body, I'll come back and help from the other side. And this week I'll think about a way to let you know I'm there. I don't smoke, so that can't be it. But I'd like to help from whatever realm I'm in to bring more clarity to who we are, what our needs are, what our purpose is. That's my wish for the universe, that I be a part of making it a better place and that I can make a difference. Moonsun says she had a dream about her death, even the outfit she was wearing when she died. I have not worn it yet. Lately I've been thinking I should give it away, although it was a very peaceful death. So people are getting these images of what's going on. German healer Bruno Gröning transitioned in the late 50s and continues to come back and heal people, Norm says. Wonderful things going on. This has been an inspiring show to get us to really think about what's going on and how we deal with the loss of our rights, the loss of our siblings, our parents, our companions, our ideals. And I think for me, it's I need to do everything that I can do to help or hinder a situation. And then if it happens anyway, I need to accept with grace, because without that that rule, I guess, for myself, I am in a state of stress. And I think stress kills us quicker. Richard's been
I think, as always, I think that, you know, starting the conversation moving, and I mean even what we're doing now with us talking about it and people in chat talking about it and, you know, just breaking the egg open of, okay, we can actually talk about this subject is a step in the right direction. Release some of the charge on it.
Yes. You know, there's so many things about what the government is doing, and then you vote to get them out, and then they steal your vote, and you feel absolutely helpless. I don't know how to solve that one, but I think just with being able to keep our field, our energy field, clean and clear and balanced, that helps us cope a little better. But that's just my prejudiced opinion.
Yeah, and I think when you finally do cross over, that we'll probably hear some sort of special tone. Like the old, in the old days, the pages used to walk around in the NBC studios in the days when they actually had studios, and they'd walk around and play those tones on a xylophone, on a miniature xylophone, that dong, dong, dong.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll have some sort of, you'll have some sort of like doorbell.
That's a good idea. I'll work on it. Thank you, thank you, Richard, for being here and helping with this wonderful discussion. Thank all of you.
And thanks, chat. The chat has really been fabulous today.
I mean,
you're
has.
Always great, but, you know, today it's really been on fire. It's been great. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Sherry.
I'm going to make a copy and save it. For those of you who want to make a copy of the chat, go click inside the chat, Control-A to grab all of it, Control-C to copy it. There is some great information there. And for those of you who are practitioners, we'll see you in an hour or so, and we have a two-hour show with Jill Mattson. Please join us for happy hour. I don't know what we're doing, but it's always something exciting. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.